This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 15th of March, 2019. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We've got extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 15th of March, which this week have been edited by Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are Student Homes in New Revamp Plan, Overhaul of Taxi Rules Planned by City Bosses, City Centre Given Spring Clean-Up. May we have the story behind the first headline, please? Heather.
Thanks, Robert. Student Homes in New Revamp Plan. Residents will be given a first look at new plans to regenerate part of Winnell at a public consultation taking place next week. Under the plans, the Cavendish Centre in Winnell Industrial Estate will be transformed into new offices, as well as accommodation for around 85 students. The building, which is currently used as serviced office space, is more than 50 years old and currently in a state of disrepair, according to new owners, the Cavendish Winchester Limited. Director Stephen Davis said, "We believe our proposals will help revitalise this part of Winchester and replace a dilapidated old building which is no longer fit for purpose with a thriving new office hub of equivalent floor space that responds to modern ways of working. To make the scheme viable, we have also introduced purpose-built student accommodation with around 85 beds to help meet the needs of university students in the area and free up existing family homes that are being used by students living in houses of multiple occupation. According to the plans, which are set to go on display, the proposed new building would be arranged around two landscaped courtyards, with the majority of parking under the building. The office would be the main focus of the scheme, located centrally on the site and clearly visible from the main site entrance with glazed facades to the north and south elevations. The student accommodation will be on the eastern side of the site, with the majority of the study bedrooms looking onto the landscaped courtyards and gardens. Winchester City Council leader and portfolio holder for housing, Councillor Caroline Horrell, refused to comment on the specific plans, but said the need for student accommodation would be looked at through the council's local plan review, and added, "We do need offices for the city. We know that we have insufficient space, particularly for small and medium-sized enterprises." The plans will go on display to the public at a consultation event taking place on Wednesday, March the 20th, in Unit 8, off the Cavendish Centre in Winnell, between 4 p.m. and 8 p.m.
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, overhaul of taxi rules planned by city bosses. Civic chiefs are looking at a raft of changes to the way taxi services are regulated in Winchester after a woman was attacked and orally raped by a driver operating in the city. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Environment and chairman of the Council's Traffic and Parking Committee, revealed the plans after 29-year-old driver Farham Khan of Derby Road, Southampton, was jailed last month. It was later revealed by the Chronicle that Khan had been licensed by City of Wolverhampton Council, an issue that has been raised previously in Winchester. Councillor Warwick said, "This sad case is a reminder of the importance of the licensing process in terms of public safety and minimising the risk to the customers of our district. This incident has also caused shock within the Winchester taxi trade, and they are keen to work with us to ensure that they maintain public confidence in their service. We took the decision last year to review and revamp our taxi licensing policy to raise the bar of the district's taxi offer. This will cover a variety of matters from public safety to the appearance and type of vehicles in the taxi fleet. Councillor Warwick hinted that this could mean a specifically coloured livery for Winchester licensed taxis in a scheme similar to that of Southampton City Council. The authority says all licensed hackney carriages in Southampton must be painted white, while all other licensed taxis in the city, such as private hire, which have to be pre-booked, must not be white. The changes by Winchester City Council also include mandatory classroom-based safeguarding training for all drivers licensed by the City Council. Leader Councillor Caroline Horrell also said she was lobbying Wolverhampton Council and the government to stop a legal loophole allowing drivers to be licensed by local authorities but work in another part of the country. And this is accompanied by a very smart picture of a row of taxis in Southampton, all painted a beautiful uniform white.
Can we have the third headline story, please, Jane?
And that is City Centre given spring clean. Winchester City Centre has been given a spring clean by the council's neighbourhood services and special maintenance teams. Abandoned road signs and cones, shopping trolleys, sacks of waste were amongst the items picked up from city streets and north walls. Winchester City Council portfolio holder for the environment, Councillor Jan Warwick, said, "It is so important that the city is kept looking at its best. We will continue to work hard to ensure that Winchester continues to be a clean and pleasant place for residents, businesses and visitors." And this is accompanied by a photograph of Jan Warwick in one of the gardens in Winchester with two very large green dustbins that will take, that are dual bin use apparently, and will take anything from paper and plastic to dog poo. So hopefully the gardens will be clean.
And that concludes our headline stories. Now we'll continue with death notices and Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, editorial comment, question and answer my Winchester and Belgarum diary. And we'll end with items of general news. I shall start with death notices. Birmingham, David Birmingham, after a long illness, aged 62. Bradshaw, Sheila Bradshaw, née Broadbank, peacefully after a long illness, aged 69. Christie, Henry Murrow Murray Jock Christie, peacefully at Berwick Court Nursing Home, aged 94. Cox, Catherine Jane née Rickman Cox, aged 86. Farmer, Alison Margaret Farmer, at home, aged 51. Jackson, Jennifer Joyce Jenny Jackson, aged 78. Johnstone, Marjorie Helen Johnstone, peacefully after a short illness. Masters, John Thomas Masters, former head teacher of Woolston School, Southampton, after a long illness. Russell, Barbara Russell, aged 79, peacefully at home. Smith, Henry John Smith, Kingsworthy, retired forester, aged 92. Stepney, John Edward Charles Stepney, aged 74. Thompson, Joyce Evelyn Joy Thompson, aged 89. Titheridge, Peggy Titheridge, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Watson, the Reverend John L. Watson, MA. Webb, Morris Eric Alfred Alf Webb, aged 91. Witcher, Kathleen Witcher, peacefully, aged 89. And finally, York, Chris York, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 72. Jane's got Christian comment.
And Christian comment this week is reflecting on the mentors in our lives. Last Thursday, I made the effort to attend the funeral in Basingstoke Crematorium of a former colleague. To say he was distinguished is an understatement. There was much about his life I had not known. I had thought I was early and yet had to park on the grass beyond the car park, such were the numbers who had turned out to pay their respects. I was aware that he was connected to the Territorial Army, and the Piper and Guard of Honour bore witness to this, but I had not realised the level of his involvement. I did know of his accomplishments as a consultant chemical pathologist, and especially as it involved me personally, of his role as hospital tutor and later as postgraduate Dean of Wessex. As I looked around at the many colleagues, some very elderly and embracing all medical specialities, I was struck by our testimony to his fairness in the development of all junior doctors for the future. We heard in the tribute paid of his kindness to all, and how often he went the extra mile to help people in difficulty. His family also told of his positive, loving influence on their lives. Even in retirement, he gave his time and organisational skills to help his local community. A truly inspiring man and an inspiring funeral. I was glad I went. I have always thought of him as one of my mentors, particularly in trying to help and develop medical and other health professionals. Mentoring is an interesting word and seems very topical. The health service now trains people to be mentors, and on appointment, a new consultant is often asked and indeed encouraged to have one, and one is then allocated. I'm not sure, however, that this really works, for in my own experience, a good mentor has to be someone you both like and respect. This leads to a relationship through which one can guide and develop. Interestingly, I've just received an advert for a course in training to be a mentor, which stresses the differences between mentoring and coaching, seems more directed at improving actual performance. In the Christian Church, we often talk of soul friends and spiritual directors, who are sometimes available to help us mature in our own faith, and includes the development of our prayer lives. Sometimes these are paid and advertise their services. Like mentors, though, I believe they have to be liked and respected to be effective. Lent is a good time to reflect on the people who have influenced our lives and the why and how which may help the lives of others. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is the editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. 8 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
City obstacles, it says. Keith Hatter writes, Sir, I should like to express my appreciation to Sue Coles, who wrote in letters March the 7th, for adding a point, although the principle of Occam's razor makes it unnecessary, to the argument for moving the cycle racks as part of the St. Maurice Covert improvement. As she notes, there are many obstacles to pedestrians throughout the centre of Winchester, the inference to be drawn from which is that every opportunity should be taken to reduce their number. Keith Hatter, Chairman, Winchester Area Access for All, Arthur Road, Hyde, Winchester.
Phil Gagg writes about a staggering claim. Sir, like your correspondent Ms. Agombar, letters March the 7th, I was staggered to read that a councillor told her that air pollution in Winchester is not that bad. I very much hope that the councillor's views are not typical, otherwise it seems we're not in safe hands. Estimates vary, but there are about 40 deaths caused by pollution in the area around Winchester, and over twice that in the whole district. We should be no more complacent about this than we are about deaths in tower block fires or air display accidents. The consistently high level of air pollution in Winchester City Centre worsen the health and shorten the lives of all of us who live and work here and of those who visit regularly. In addition, people coming into Winchester by car are exposed to high levels of pollution throughout their journey. We must do more about this. The extensive car parking proposed for the station approach must be scrapped immediately as a first easy step towards an effective movement strategy, and a start to reducing radically Winchester's air pollution and contribution to global warming. The councillor was wrong to assume that people who live in the country do not care about air pollution. Recent WINAC pollution polls showed quite clearly that people who live in the district outside Winchester are as keen to reduce traffic in Winchester as people who live in Winchester. Before we vote in the May local elections, I urge us all to check to see which candidates will campaign to reduce pollution and save us all from a wide range of serious illnesses and early death. It would be self-destructive to vote for anybody who does not care. Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
And Simon Lever writes, Recycling Plan. Sir, I always take the plastic containers and associated waste to the local collection point. Sadly, the idea of recycling plastic is a bit of a fantasy. Unlike glass milk bottles, which could be sterilised and reused, plastic waste is an escalating cause for alarm, as it cannot really be recycled or reused. In the Netherlands, plastic waste is reduced to granules and incorporated in cycle paths. Further, discarded vehicle tyres are reprocessed into surface layers for motorways. The rain sinks into the surface and runs out on either side of the motorway. It is like driving dry in a deluge. An investigation to see if it would be practical and cost-effective would be a positive step forward. There is always much talk about the damage to the environment plastic waste causes. Perhaps it is time to actually have a multi-party discussion, make a decision to address this issue. And that was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Housing disaster, writes Karen Barrett. I was interested to read your question and answer column on March the 7th, featuring former City Councillor Ian Tate. I certainly agree with him that one of the worst things about Winchester is the lack of affordable housing. It must be a great relief to Mr. Tate that since he left the council, he does not have to try to justify the failed housing policies of the Conservative Party. Margaret Thatcher's Right to Buy scheme has been disastrous. It has seen council houses built with public money ending up in private landlords' portfolios. I grew up on a council estate in Southampton. The system worked well, providing truly affordable housing, with enough flexibility to enable young couples to progress from flats to houses when children came along, then back again in empty nest later life, with the ultimate safety net of sheltered accommodation in old age. If people earned enough, they bought into the private sector. The council houses were left still there for the next generation. Now many former family houses are houses of multiple occupation, as private owners maximise profits. We currently have the ludicrous situation of some local authorities being forced to pay inflated rents for private sector properties which they once owned in order to house the homeless and reduce waiting lists. In recent years, the government has compounded their past errors by changes in the planning system, which give private developers opportunities to avoid making any meaningful contribution. It enables developers to avoid making any meaningful contribution to affordable housing on so-called viability grounds. Not that this will matter much in future, as the extension of right to buy to housing association property will result in the already totally inadequate social provision on multi-million pound developments going the same way as council houses did.
And Michael Krask is writing a letter called Fighting Homes, which is on a similar subject to the one you've just heard. Sir, the form of development that has taken hold along Chorbolton Avenue over recent years has met with continuous but ultimately powerless resistance from neighbours in the local community. It has given much development a bad name, yet we all recognise the real need for new homes, in particular, more affordable homes for starter households and downsizers. Those of us lucky enough to live in nearby Week and neighbouring areas in St Barnabas Ward are now feeling the accelerating push of the Chilbolton effect. Along with private landlords converting family homes into multiple occupancy, the character of our area is changing fast and in a seemingly uncontrolled way. Yet local people have very little voice in this inevitable process. Living close to the centre of Winchester while enjoying easy access to green open spaces, wonderful trees and many generous gardens, you could say we have the best of both worlds. But there is real concern that on top of the pressure from Barton Farm, growing speculative overdevelopment of windfall sites is about to rob this corner of Winchester of its semi-rural character and green lungs, while adding nothing to sustainable infrastructure. Council resources are stretched by big-ticket projects like the city centre regeneration. Planning and enforcement teams who operate right across the district are still under-resourced for the challenges they face. We need a strong plan for Winchester Town and wards like St Barnabas to ensure we get the kind of homes we badly need and the infrastructure to protect our living environment. We've started a petition here in St Barnabas Ward calling for changes in the planning process. Even if you do not live in the weak area, we think our efforts will be of benefit to current and future residents across the city as a whole. That's from Michael Crast, 2 Stony Lane Court, Stony Lane, Winchester.
And Eileen Berry writes, Vulnerable Help. Sir, we hear an awful lot about the vulnerable people in our city. As I have said before, they cause no trouble and live on very little. They seem to congregate and support each other, but help is very limited. There is another demon that is raising its ugly head in the city, and that's the drug problem. Unfortunately, there are people that are being allocated homes that are situated where a lot of these vulnerable people live. It has come to my attention, sadly, that drugs are being sold from various premises. It so happens, without mentioning where this is, I was actually in my car, stationary, and I watched what I considered to be a sale of drugs going on. The reason that I am writing this letter is that we need to protect those who are vulnerable but cause us no trouble. It is obvious the city cannot provide all that is required for all those people who have problems. I think all the housing associations should be aware who they are renting their properties to. There is no doubt in my mind that we are going to have to address this problem, and we are going to have to give more consideration to those who desperately need it. You can count on one hand where those who need somewhere to go for their days, someone to talk to, somewhere to do their washing perhaps, or just have a cup of coffee and a meal together to lighten their lives, can go. Emmaus is one. They have strict rules there. They try very hard to give people a chance to get on their feet. Night Shelter in Jury Street has most certainly moved with the times. Also Trinity, which has had planning permission for some units for people to live in. The point of this is we shouldn't allow more worry to come to residents who have been living peacefully in their own environment to suddenly be confronted with complete strangers coming and going who are selling and buying drugs. And that was from Eileen Berry, City Councillor for St Barnabas Ward, Priorsdean Road, Hairstock.
Bypass mistake, writes Ian Holmes. I am delighted to read that the City of Winchester Trust now has a vision for the future of the city, which particularly includes a western bypass to divert traffic from the city centre. This has been one of my major suggestions in my earlier letters. That said, I notice on the map of Chronicle, January the 24th, that this bypass should be similar to Alsford Bypass. Now that would be a major mistake. The nature and volume of the likely traffic on our new bypass would be much greater in volume, as well as being larger and heavier than that using the Alsford Bypass. I would also suggest that this bypass should be a dual carriageway, just as we had in the 1970s and 80s, and that it be extended in the north around Littleton to the Three Maids Hill Junction, and in the south to Junction 11 of the M3. I also noticed that park and ride facilities were the subject of some discussion 25 years ago from your files, February 28th. The Trust apparently wishes to see fewer car parks in the centre, Thus, more of those facilities are required to allow that to happen. Looking at the map again, the only such facility proposed for the north side of the city centre is one by the Barton Farm housing development. This cannot be right. Fine for the A34, but what about all the traffic heading towards the city centre from the A33, M3, as well as that from Itchen Abbas and Alsford? Also, what about a standalone coach park near the M3? Now, please be assured that I support the view that it is important Winchester is prepared for the future. Inevitably, it's all going to involve money and time. But I would hope that your From the Files input in 25 years' time will be able to reflect positively on today's discussions and debates. Ian Holmes, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
And LJ White writes a brief letter about a hidden issue. Sir, just a brief question without any political bias. Many British registered cars have registration plates displaying the European Union Circle of Stars emblem. So my question is, what happens to said plates when we leave Europe? Will car owners have to get new GB-only plates? And if so, will they have to pay? Even if the plates are still legal in Britain after Brexit, will a motorist be committing an offence if he or she is driving within the EU? Just wondering, and I'm not a car owner. LJ White, Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
And on that note, we'll end letters to the editor and thank everybody who contributed. It's time for your say. After six people were fatally stabbed in 1 week, we asked people what they thought about rising knife crime. And Jane's got the answers.
And four people here. Firstly, Brian Baxter, 60, semi-retired of Hyde Street in Hyde, said, "Well, it's down to the lack of good policing. We need more police presence on the street, otherwise it will keep happening." Tobias Lammers, 38, marketing agent of London Road, Kingsworthy, said, "I'm not sure it's down to the police. This seems more of a social issue, and I'm sure it could be stopped through teaching children differently." Ashley Wilson, 46, IT consultant of Hairstock Winchester, said, "Well, I'm glad they're combating the issue now. Thankfully, I feel safe in Winchester. But more police on the streets across the country would help reduce knife crime." And Barnaby Wrist Smith, 19, teaching assistant of Shepherd's Road, Winnall, said, "I'm scared by it. Just hope the police will put an end to it soon and apply tighter regulations. Six in 1 week is shocking."
We're going back through the mists of time now for historical news items from our files, starting with 25 years ago, read by Heather.
Friday, March the 18th, 1994. Canon Roger Job, the Vice Dean and Precentor of Winchester Cathedral, is to resign at the end of August, following the ordination of women to priesthood. He said, "I am an old-fashioned Tractarian. The Church of England claims to be a true part of the Catholic Church. Her priesthood must therefore remain male until a greater body than General Synod should determine otherwise. Consequently, I can never accept these women priests, and profoundly disagree with the provisions of the Episcopal Ministry Act of Synod of 1993. Tractarians follow a system of high church principles set out in a series of tracts by the Oxford movement in the 19th century. The Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend Trevor Beeson, commented, "I am greatly saddened by Canon Job's decision to resign. I profoundly disagree with his views about the ordination of women to the priesthood, but I would defend to the last his right to express these views and to judge the consequences of them for his own ministry. I admire his courage, and we remain good friends." And the second item says, "A Winchester Action Group has been formed to counteract the loss of the city's job club. The Executive Action Group for Employment Recruitment, EGER, has teamed up with job club members to canvass the powers that be to provide proper facilities in the area. EGER is a self-support group founded last year under the auspices of the Winchester District Council of Community Service and meets at the Winchester Centre in Parchment Street. Said Eager's Peter Crumbock, "There is a growing sense of outrage amongst the unemployed, as well as those directly or indirectly concerned with unemployment in this region, that due to cuts in funding imposed by the Employment Services Department, Winchester Job Club will close on March the 25th. The nearest club was now in Eastleigh, but there was only room for 5 more members there." He added that there were 4,600 people unemployed in the Winchester area.
Noel's going to take us back 50 years.
Yes, I've got two items from Saturday, March the 15th, 1969. The first one. With the early death last year of Mr. Charles Stuart Dayborn at the age of 48 years, the Winchester School of Art lost a much-loved and talented teacher. On Monday, a memorial exhibition of his work opened at the School of Art. Born in Woking in 1920, Stuart Dayborn studied art at Kingston School of Art and at the Royal College of Art. He was appointed to the staff of the Winchester School of Art in 1948. And he played an important part in establishing the reputation of the school in post-war years. Apart from his work with the full-time students, he was well known to a great many local artists who attended his evening classes, which were later transferred to St. Thomas's Further Education Centre, Winchester. As a teacher, he gave tremendous help and encouragement to his students, skillfully bringing out their latent talents. And the second item, which could actually happen today, Winchester City Council are investigating ways of relieving the student accommodation problem in the city. At the Housing and Health Committee meeting on Tuesday evening, the town clerk said he had been approached by the art school secretary regarding the problem. A meeting had been held with the art school representatives, and Mr. McCall said he was exploring ways of getting special types of housing for the students. If the Housing and Health Committee gave their blessing, he would try to get government financial help for a scheme which he had in mind. He gave no further details, except that he envisaged it would be on a small scale. He said, "There is no doubt that the students have quite an accommodation problem in Winchester." The committee approved his action, and Alderman Eric Neat commented, "The student accommodation question should have been dealt with at the time when all that money was spent on the art school."
Let's go back 100 years now, Jane.
And 100 years ago was Saturday, March the 15th, 1919. Recently, in view of the fact that the American troops would soon be making their exit from Winchester, the staff of the American YMCA held an interesting get-together supper, which took the form of a farewell to Mr. Frederick W. Witham, the sub-area and camp secretary, who is now attached to headquarters YMCA in Paris. Miss Marguerite Rose and Miss Brittingham, young lady workers, and Mrs. Josephine Woodford, the mother of Winnell Hutt, took charge of the supper arrangements, the tables being tastefully laid. And the second item, a public meeting was held in the banqueting room of the Guildhall on Thursday evening for the purpose of receiving and considering a report from the committee appointed at the public meeting on February the 3rd to deal with the suggestions for a war memorial in Winchester. The mayor read the report. "We understand that the County Memorial Committee is not unwilling to withdraw its present scheme of a memorial gateway leading to the west end of the cathedral in favour of a new roadway from Southgate Street to Great Minster Street, in which event we are unanimously of the opinion that the most satisfactory course for the city to adopt is to join with the county in carrying out this memorial."
Finally, it's 200 years ago.
And it's Monday, March the 15th, 1819. Last Monday night, some villains broke into the dwelling house of Mr. W. Budd of North Street, Ropley, and succeeded in taking away a quantity of pork, a chine, some cheese, 5 or 6 loaves of bread, and about 1 dozen of port wine. A liberal reward has been offered for the discovery of the offenders.
Back to the present. It's First Person by George Hayter, and Noel's going to read it.
Yes, George Hayter's headline is Trump's Wall Might Do Good. And if you object to some of the sentiments, please don't blame the messenger. The concentration camp experience is not available in Hampshire. There is no ruin of a race eradication processing plant within a 2-mile drive of Winchester. In a way, that's unfortunate, because Camp Westerbork strengthened my commitment to democracy. Going there increased my awareness of political extremists and the hate they can encourage in their supporters. Camp Westerbork is a former Nazi concentration camp in the Netherlands. On the final mile to the camp, our coach followed the course of a railway, which 75 years ago carried frightened Jewish men, women and children. We got off the coach outside the camp entrance, where the luxurious 3-story timber home of the camp commandant is preserved in a weatherproof glass box 30 feet high. Most of the camp was demolished in 1971, but a 1992 reconstruction provided earthen banks to mark the position of key elements, such as work huts, punishment huts, and train loading platform. To limit hysteria among prisoners, the Germans tried to prevent them thinking they were to be killed. Reassuring facilities like a school and a hospital were provided. There were swings for children. There was even a nightclub. But it's likely that every prisoner feared the worst. Survivors have written of their terror and of the dreaded weekly roll call when the names of those to be shipped out on the next train were announced. Trains took 100,000 on to Germany, where they were gassed to death. Most aspects of the camp came as little surprise to me. TV documentaries and Schindler's List had already given me an idea of how Hitler industrialised genocide worked. But the camp did show me one thing: fear. When you walk around inside the recreated barbed wire and see fragments of huts, a watchtower and cattle trucks, you start to experience the dread prisoners must have felt. You can imagine yourself as one of those 100,000 innocents caught up in an authoritarian state run by murderers. I'm concerned about the current president of the USA. Of course, Donald Trump is not a murderer or a right-wing dictator, but I think he does exhibit worrying characteristics. He refused to condemn a demonstration by US Nazis. He appeared to relish the idea of a disruptive protester at one of his rallies being beaten up. He's advocated torture and called for his electoral opponents to be jailed. He issues internet pronouncements in a style Mussolini would have envied, and he wants to build a wall along the Mexican border. Hang on. That last characteristic, about wanting a wall, may, on second thoughts, not be so bad. Following my camp visit, I've become more aware of the risks of letting thousands of illegal Mexican immigrants climb through the wire fence that currently guards the border. So many illegals have flooded in that Hispanic people now account for a third of the population of neighbouring California. They are now 1/6 of the US as a whole. Many longer established citizens view their arrival as an invasion and resent Hispanics. Conflicts with resented communities from Bosnia to Myanmar and from Rwanda to Fiji have shown the horrors that resentment can lead to. My experience in talking to ethnic minorities in Southampton is that most support strong UK immigration controls. They know that a big racial influx could cause resentment. That's why Trump's aim to strengthen his border has merit. And even if his $5.6 billion wall fails to stop illegals, it will still not be a waste of money, because it will prevent right-wing propagandists claiming that the wall was frustrated by liberals. The last thing that the world's most powerful democracy needs is a wall conspiracy theory that makes angry white Americans vote for a second Trump term.
I think it's time for editorial comment now. So over to you, Jane.
And editorial comment this week is no solution in sight to the planning dilemma. It's becoming an increasingly familiar problem for planners, not just in Winchester. We need more homes, but no one wants them in their backyards. This week's Chronicle features a number of planning stories relating to accommodation of all varieties, be it students, general housing, or supported living for the elderly. It would be fair to say Winchester City Council is taking action to build more new homes, although it would also be fair to say Winchester has some of the highest house prices in the country, keeping first-time buyers off the ladder. So the Winchester district cannot simply say, oh, not here, we've done our part. Simply dumping mass developments in the countryside, ripping up vital green lungs, is not a solution, though. Not only does it enrage locals who enjoy their quality of life, it hinders progress in fighting climate change. If there are fewer trees and plants to deal with, the carbon dioxide produced by modern life, there's only one place for it to go. Seeing a variety of plans is promising as keeping students in purpose-built accommodation means family homes can remain family homes rather than be converted into houses of multiple occupation, while elderly accommodation helps up free property at that end of the ladder. However, if you are reading this piece hoping for some answers to the house-building crisis, we're sorry to say you won't find them here.
See what local people think of their city. Heather, over to you for question and answer, My Winchester.
And this week it's Henry Madden, aged 28, head of media at the railway of St Paul's Hill, who tells us what he thinks of Winchester. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? I'm a big fan of the dispensary kitchen in the square. What is your favourite pub or bar? I'm biased, but St James's Tavern is my favourite after where I work. The food there's great. Your favourite shop? Oh, the Good Life Farm Shop in Kingsworthy. Great produce, nice cafe. What is your favourite building? The Pump House on Garnier Road that now houses BECG. What is your favourite view? The St Giles Hill Observation Point, without a doubt, offers the best view of the city. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Oh, the cathedral is Winchester's biggest icon. What's Winchester's best-kept secret? The railway. But I'm charged working to change that. What's the best thing about Winchester? The standard of living is higher than almost anywhere in the country. And the worst? Reluctance to change. If there were one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? It needs to be more culturally vibrant, something that is seriously lacking and has been for years. Describe Winchester in just one sentence. It's a bubble, but a comfortable one.
Over to Noel for Belgarum Diary.
Yes, Belgarum, allegedly an alternative look at the news. Latest site to revert back. There's two items here, and that's the first. The Chronicle recently reported on the application to convert Hyde House in Hyde Street, currently offices, back into a home. Usually there are concerns over changes of use of things, particularly when pubs become flats or shops become offices, etc. But the proposal for the Georgian building would see it return to the use for which it was originally built. Its use as a school and offices just a passing interlude, even if it did last more than 150 years. It's nothing new. The return of housing to the city centre has been going on for years. Cine Wessex, the photo and film archive, was housed for years in a Georgian house on St Thomas Street. It's now again a private house. On nearby St Swithin Street, there was a builder's base, Morton's, if Belgarum's memory serves. That was demolished back in the 1990s and large homes built on the site. And that item is accompanied by a very elegant picture of Hyde Abbey House on Hyde Street. Very beautiful. Lucky for whoever's taking that as a private home. And the second item, Winchester can't live without EU. This is slightly out of date because it refers back to the votes that were happening this last week. It seems the slim but vocal majority in Winchester are hoping that Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit withdrawal agreement flops in a series of Commons votes taking place this week, ongoing as the Chronicle went to press. And we know that's all flopped. And the government decides to call the whole thing off. At least that's the impression Belgarum gets, with several flags appearing in the windows of Alfie's over the past few weeks. The appearance of the flags is not the first such incident in the city centre either. Shortly before Christmas, a flag was seen hanging from City Bridge. It's worth pointing out, Winchester voted to remain in the referendum by 58.9% against 41.1%. And there's a picture of Alfies with three European flags hanging from the wall. They're very elegant, pretty flags too.
Now here's what's on. Tuesday lunchtime recitals still at Romsey Abbey, 1 o'clock p.m. to 1:40 p.m. It's free, with a retiring collection in aid of Romsey Abbey music. March the 19th to 23rd at 7:30 p.m. and some matinees as well, Middle Ground Theatre Company present a powerful courtroom drama called The Verdict, which has been adapted from Barry Reid's novel, and this is at the Theatre Royal Winchester. On March the 24th, the Apollo Theatre Company present three classic episodes of Hancock's Half Hour, also at the Theatre Royal, and tickets and details for both shows can be got from www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk or the telephone 01962 840 440 will connect you to the box office. And from March the 23rd to the 30th at 7:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. on March the 24th, Chesil Theatre presents The Real Thing by Tom Stoppard. This is a clever, witty and entertaining examination of fidelity and trust. And tickets can be obtained at £10 and from chesiltheatre.org.uk or again, telephone 0333 666 3366. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 15th of March at 6:20 a.m. and begins at 6:08 p.m. On Wednesday the 20th of March, it ends at 6:09 a.m. and begins at 6:18 p.m. Now, if you know someone who's sight impaired and they'd like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, here's who to contact. Telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And if there's a problem with your Sovereign or Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. With items of general news now, and we'll start with one read by Jane.
And here we have Decision Day for Care Home Redevelopment Proposals. Plans to demolish a Winchester care home and replace it with a 60-bed specialist dementia facility are set to be decided today by Winchester's Planning Committee. The proposal for the former 20-bed Abbeygate residential care home in Quarry Road was submitted last October, around a year after it closed down. The facility was rated as inadequate overall by the Care Quality Commission after an unannounced inspection in July 2017, and it was put into special measures. Then run by Safe Quarter, it had previously been inspected in March 2016, where managers were served with requirement notices. The CQC report stated, "The home was not clean and well maintained. A programme of maintenance was not in place to improve and maintain the home to ensure people's safety and welfare. There were not always sufficient staff deployed to meet people's needs and ensure their safety and welfare." However, it went on to say, "Staff cared for people in a kind and empathetic way, and people received their medicines in a safe and effective manner." Speaking at the time, a Safe Quarter spokesman said the decision to close was made before the inspection. The new plans have, however, proved controversial with residents due to the size and scale of the building despite being amended. St Giles's Residents Association told planners, "The St Giles Hill Residents Association acknowledges the changes that have been made. However, this would still be a very large building, by far the largest in the area, presenting long, unbroken roof lines. This contradicts the St Giles Hill neighbourhood design statement." If approved, the new care home would be run by Brendan Care, who opened the new Otterbourne Hill Care Home in Otterbourne last summer, and Octopus Healthcare. Speaking when the application was submitted, Brendan Care CEO Carol Sawyers said, As a Winchester-based charity, Brendan Care is very pleased to have this opportunity to work with specialists, Octopus Healthcare, and to be able to re-provide the existing facility with a modern, well-designed care home in Winchester. And this is accompanied by two photographs, one of the original Abbeygate Care Home on Quarry Road, which is a very large Victorian, looks like a Victorian family home, and next to it the proposed new building, which is very modern but looks much the same size, it has to be said, and height, but with square modern rooms which would be homes for the new residents of a dementia unit.
Plaque honour for man who helped fund development. The family of a man who left £600,000 to support the elderly in Winchester has unveiled a plaque in his memory. Harold Harris's donation helped fund the Chesil Lodge housing development, which was created through a Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council partnership for residents over 55. His brother Peter was on hand to unveil the memorial after Winchester MP Steve Brine officially opened the building. Peter Harris said, "It gives me a lot of pleasure to carry on with what my brother wanted, something that people would remember him by, and I'm sure he is well satisfied wherever he might be. I think it's brilliant. I've had a grand tour and met residents, and they are overwhelmed with everything they can call upon here." Sarah Thorne, Deputy Lieutenant of Hampshire, and councillors from both authorities were among attendees. Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of the City Council and portfolio holder for housing, said, "Chesil Lodge is an excellent example of working in partnership with others for the benefit of our residents. Extra Care offers a better, more modern style of care. It means people can have their own home, but with the added reassurance that help is at hand. Since it has been open, it has made a real difference to residents who live there. And it is wonderful that Harold Harris's bequest has created a legacy for older residents. I cannot thank the family enough for his donation, which has proved invaluable. The building is home to more than 50 residents and has been designed as an extra care facility, meaning residents can retain independent living with access to on-site care." Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Roy Perry, said, "Extra care is popular and increasingly in demand because it offers a unique combination of a personal front door and privacy within a contemporary setting, along with access to a wide range of communal services. Chesil Lodge is an outstanding example of this style of modern independent living for older people. As a county council, we will be continuing our investment in this popular, cost-effective care and accommodation options for the county's residents."
Claims of secret council meetings. Former Labour City Councillor Patrick Davis has criticised the allegedly excessively secret way Winchester City Council is working and has been backed by the opposition Lib Dem leader. Mr Davis says the council has ignored the findings of the inquiry into the Silver Hill fiasco, which called for greater openness in decision-making. It comes as the council is set to adapt its new constitution. Mr Davis objected to the council's astonishing 18 months of secret meetings to alter the way the council operates. He said, "It is appalling that the council has totally ignored the recommendations of the Lloyd-Jones report, A Perfect Storm, of 2017, which criticised the council's method of working through reference groups or informal policy groups, that's IPGs, which met in private over a long period to discuss the Silver Hill saga without any public papers. Another informal group of Tory and Liberal Democrat councillors has met at least six times over those 18 months to redraw the council's constitution." Mr Davis said, "This sounds very dry and boring, but over 300 pages of detailed text includes a new authority for setting up even more of these dubious groups, which meet in private with no role for the public to read the papers or hear what is being done in their name. After I raised my concerns, it was obvious that all 45 councillors, Lib Dems and Tories alike, had been aware of this exercise, but not one of them had made public what was going on. The new constitution claims to set out new rights for local citizens to influence council policy, but these will be totally useless if they're only able to do so months after a whole series of secret meetings have effectively made decisions subject only to formal endorsement. Winchester really does deserve better than this. Responding to Mr. Davis's outcry, Liberal Democrat group leader Councillor Lucille Thompson said, "I think he's probably right. I do want the council to become more open and transparent. They're making decisions, but other councillors don't know these informal meetings are going on." Councillor Thompson added the party would be calling for strong declarations of interests at the city council, meaning councillors would have to be more open about the people and groups they are affiliated with. She said, "Over recent years, we've had to declare less and less, and we think that's wrong." However, council leader Councillor Caroline Horrell said she fundamentally disagreed with Mr. Davis and Councillor Thompson. Councillor Horrell said, "I'm surprised the leader of the opposition has taken the position. She has been party to the whole thing. The view we have a much more robust decision now. We have review this through the overview and scrutiny committee and audit committee. I would refute completely it's not transparent." Councillor Horrell said that the IPG meeting minutes were made public, adding, "It's quite legitimate for the council to have working groups. IPGs have been used in the council for a very significant time." The constitution is now set to go before councillors at an extraordinary council meeting being held on Tuesday evening. Councillors will debate the new document before being asked to adopt it from April.
And here we have cash boost to fight homelessness. Thousands of pounds are going to be invested to fight homelessness across the city through a new cross-council project. Winchester City Council will benefit from £177,000 together with Test Valley Borough Council, that's TVBC, to support tenants and landlords in a bid to reduce the number of people sleeping rough. The money, which will come from the Ministry for Housing, Communities and Local Government's Private Rented Sector Access Fund, will also be put towards encouraging landlords to offer longer leases to those in housing need. The fund will be administered by TVBC, although both councils will work together to take issues affected private sector tenants. A spokesperson for TVBC confirmed that part of the fund would go towards creating two new jobs to support landlords and tenants. Commenting on the funding, Councillor Phil Bundy, Housing and Environmental Health Portfolio Folder at TVBC, said, "Homelessness is a key priority for Test Valley Borough Council, and these funds will help to serve those in housing need to prevent homelessness on our streets. We also welcome the opportunity to work closely with Winchester City Council colleagues to develop a project that will benefit residents across both areas. Tackling homelessness is a clear objective for the council, and this money will enable us to take another step towards achieving this goal." Winchester City Council leader and portfolio holder for housing, Councillor Caroline Horrell, added, "I think it's good news all round." The funding awarded will be distributed to the councils over 2019 and 2020.
New scheme to help animals. A Hampshire zoo has teamed up with the Woodland Trust for a project to help keep animals happy and healthy. On March the 14th, Marwell Zoo will be working with the trust to plant 7,000 saplings in a bid to create a new 8-acre wood on farmland at the zoo. The zoo say the move will help create a sustainable solution to feed the animals. A spokesman said, "To keep animals such as our okapi, giraffes and eastern bongo happy, we like to recreate their wild diet of tree fodder for the nutritional and medicinal benefits it brings to the animals. Not only will the production of forage be a huge benefit for the animals, Britain's native species will rejoice too. The trees will help improve soil stability and air quality, slow the flow of floodwater, and provide a home for wildlife. The move's a latest project by Marwell to help reduce its environmental... The move is the latest project by Marwell to help reduce its environmental project impact. Last year, the zoo revealed it was using the animals to help power its boiler. With more than 700 tonnes of animal waste being generated, it is now being put to use as fuel to heat the tropical house at the attraction. As previously reported, the £7.8 million tropical house is part of a 10-year, £17 million investment strategy by Marwell to offer improved habitats for animals and a better experience for guests. It was supported by a £1.5 million local growth fund investment from the Enterprise M3 Local Enterprise Partnership.
Warning over online fraud. This is really important. Hampshire's future pet owners are being warned of a new online fraud that has so far scammed victims out of £3 million. Fraudsters are advertising pets and pet accessories on online marketplaces at a lower than expected price in an attempt to attract victims. They are then demanding full payment or a deposit for the animal via bank transfer or electronic wire. Between March 2012 and April 2018, 5,066 reports of this fraud were made to Action Fraud, and victims reported losing £3,129,273 during this time, an average of £40,640 per month. Director of Action Fraud, Pauline Smith, said, "When a person falls victim to this fraud, the upset and financial loss caused can be huge, and the promise of a family pet to children is often left empty. This is why it's so important that you follow our advice to help protect yourself and always trust your instincts. If an offer seems too good to be true, it probably is. If you think you have been a victim of fraud, report it to us." In some cases, the fraudsters are telling victims that they need to pay further fees for animal travel insurance, documentation, or special travel cages. Victims are promised that some or all of these extra fees will be refunded when they receive the animal. However, once these funds have been transferred, the fraudster will stop all communication. A report from Action Fraud and the National Fraud Intelligence Bureau shows that fraudsters are targeting victims who wish to buy popular breeds. The highest number of reports related to pugs, with 224 reports, were made between January 2012 and May 2018, and victims losing £76,451. Scammers are also offering pet-related products for sale which don't exist or are not as it described. Equine accessories accounted for 92% of the monetary losses.
And here we have fountains a step closer. New water fountains in the heart of Winchester are close to becoming reality as the City Council joins the fight against single-use plastics. Several sites in the city centre have been identified in a bid to reduce the use of disposable plastic drinking bottles and cups. Portfolio holder for Environment, Councillor Jan Warwick, said, "I am delighted that we are moving closer to installing water fountains in these locations that mean that visitors and residents in the city centre are never far away from somewhere to refill their bottles so they can stay hydrated and healthy. Environmentally, this has clear benefits and will help us in the fight to reduce the use of single-use plastics. Locations could include Abbey Gardens, City Museum and Middle Brook Street Car Park." And this is accompanied by a photograph of Councillor Jan Warwick filling her own water bottle, not a plastic one, from one of the proposed drinking fountains, which looks as if it's not one of those with a great big blue plastic water container on the top that's driven around the country. So hopefully will be attached to the water mains.
Lib Dem leader praises staff on hospital visit And there's a picture of a smiling Vince Cable in the ball pool with a tiny child. They're beaming at each other and both playing in among all those balls that they have in those things. The leader of the Liberal Democrats has praised the staff at Winchester's hospital after a visit to the city last week. Sir Vince Cable paid a visit to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and charity Home Start Winchester. Mr. Cable met with Chief Executive Alex Whitfield and Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust Chairman Steve Erskine during a tour of the emergency department, Burwell House, which will soon become Winchester Hospice, and the Colebrook Day Unit. He said it's been very informative, very enjoyable, and a very encouraging visit. We always hear about the health service being under pressure. Yet everywhere I've been here, I've seen very high morale, high achievement, and pride in the hospital, which is what you want to hear. While in the emergency department, Mr. Cable spoke to staff about the building work that's underway to create space for additional rapid assessment and treatment areas, as well as a paediatric assessment unit. He then moved on to Burwell House, where he was told about plans for a hospice in the unused building. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive, said, "I'd like to thank Vince for taking time out of his busy schedule to visit Winchester Hospital. We are incredibly excited about the improvements that are taking place in our emergency department and the plans for Winchester Hospice, which will be a fantastic addition to the healthcare facilities available in the city." Mr. Cable then visited Home Start Winchester, where he was accompanied by Lib Dem City Councillor Linda Murphy. Among those he met were Mark and Rachel, who spoke frankly about how the charity had made a difference to both their lives and that of their 5-year-old son Henry. Both Mark and Rachel are in poor health, but the charity enabled them to get out and meet other families in a similar situation. After meeting with other families, staff members and trustees, Mr. Cable said, "I visited Home Start Winchester and saw for myself the excellent work being done to empower parents of young families to face the many and varied challenges they experience with increased confidence and a true feeling of mutual support and friendship. Long may the charity continue to transform the lives of both parents and children alike in such an impressive and long-lasting way."
And another item about Home Start: calls for volunteers to support families in the city. Family support charity Home Start Winchester is looking for more volunteers to join its events team to help with fundraising. Home Start Winchester chairman Liz Cooper said, "We are a merry band and have great fun organising events like tennis tournaments, quizzes, dog walks, golf tournaments and literary evenings with the likes of Dame Judy Dench. We meet once every 6 weeks or so, depending on what events are coming up, and meetings are always very lively. Like many charities across the UK, Home Start Winchester has to compete with other organisations in an ever-increasingly competitive funding market. Though we have been fortunate to receive funding from BBC Children in Need and Winchester City Council, but we must still raise nearly 85% of our income from grants, trusts, individual donations and fundraising." And this is accompanied by a merry picture of a group of people out for a long walk. It says it's a recent charity dog walk, but it's a lot of people and there's one dog hiding behind the other people.
We have NHS Trust praised for improvements. Solent NHS Trust, which provides community and mental health care services across Hampshire, Southampton and Portsmouth, has been praised for its improvements by inspectors after receiving a rating of good. In 2016, the Trust was told to do better as part of a report which criticised its safety, effectiveness and leadership. Now, examiners have given the Trust the thumbs up, even noting that the care the organisation provides was deemed to be outstanding. This ruling has been welcomed by chiefs at the Trust, which run services at Hythe, Princess Anne, Queen Alexandra, Royal Hampshire County and Southampton General Hospitals. The report noted that outstanding areas included the vision and purpose of the organisation, as well as the strong medical leadership, and also the way in which the Trust actively engages in collaborative work with external partners. Inspectors also found that the community adult services planned and provided services in a way that met the needs of local residents, and services were organised and delivered to take account of and meet the needs of different people, including those in vulnerable circumstances. It was also noted that there was effective cross-team working between staff in different departments, as well as organisations outside the Trust. Within the mental health services and throughout the Trust as a whole, inspectors found staff were respectful, compassionate and kind towards patients. Inspectors noticed that they observed conversations between staff and patients, demonstrating highly motivated care provided in a way that promoted patients' dignity. Inspectors also said that there were rigorous systems in place to keep staff and patients safe, with staff assessing and reviewing patient risk regularly. Sue Harriman, Trust Chief Executive, said, "The results are a tribute to our teams who consistently give great care, create a great place to work and keep people safe and well at or close to home. I'm especially proud that the CQC found that we are outstanding at providing caring services. Every day I see and hear examples of innovative and inspirational patient care, and I know these ratings are well deserved." She added, "We pride ourselves on being an organisation with improvement and learning at its core, and this report is a testament to that." Dr. Nigel Atchison, CQC's Deputy Chief Inspector of Hospitals for the South, added, "I am pleased that the Trust has taken to heart the findings from our previous inspection reports and built on them. However, there are some areas within the Trust that still need work."
Focusing on the rural future. The Rural Future of Hampshire was the focus for a special collection of experts, academics and councillors as they debated how the country will look in 3 decades' time. It came as part of the Hampshire 2050 Commission, which noted that while rural life is a source of immense enjoyment, it is one of the county's biggest challenges, as the area is made up of more than 80% green space. The Commission set up to explore how best to ensure Hampshire's future prosperity, focused its hearing on the future of living and working in the countryside. Held at the County Council offices in Winchester, discussions were made from food production to biodiversity, and evidence was presented on farming and forestry, the challenges of facing commoners of the New Forest, and the future of rural services. Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Roy Perry, said, "While Hampshire is indeed a place of stunning countryside and coastline, there is a rural reality that many may not see. The way we manage land and balance competing pressures such as food production, biodiversity or renewable energy have a significant impact on the natural environment and quality of life. What has been made clear to us today is that this beautiful countryside enjoyed by so many people, both residents, businesses and visitors alike, is not here by accident, but is the result of generations of hard work and careful stewardship." He added, "Connectivity, environmental impacts, affordability, an ageing population and preserving traditional skills are just some of the issues set to impact on living and working in Hampshire's countryside. There's a particular challenge around providing housing in rural communities to meet local needs. These issues must be carefully considered by a range of organisations and authorities if rural Hampshire is going to be an attractive and vibrant place for the next generation."
Me time for carers. A Hampshire Care Company has put on 2 days of pampering for its staff to thank them for their work. Caremark Winchester and Eastleigh, an in-home care company, put on the days as care manager Alina Conway, MD Callum Gray, wanted to support the people who are always supporting others. Care workers were invited to book a slot with a qualified beautician with manicures or massages available on the day. Caremark also offered to cover other treatments that couldn't be administered in the office. Callum and Alina helped beautician Casey Engel Gilmore, who's also a care worker, set up a temporary beauty salon at their head office in Portsmouth Road, Eastleigh. Alina said it was so wonderful to see our care workers stop and take some time out for themselves. They truly deserved it. Our care workers are often so busy looking after clients and taking care of their families that they often forget to stop and enjoy some guilt-free me time. So we took the decision out of their hands and told them we were treating them for a change. It's something we plan to do again in the not-too-distant future.
And now we have grants to reduce waste at home. Grants are up for grabs in Hampshire. The County Council is offering grants of up to £5,000 to help kickstart or expand projects, products and services which prevent waste at home. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council, said, "Dealing with waste is a costly business for everyone, and reducing the amount of household waste produced in the first place can make a big difference. We know that some of the best work in waste reduction goes on at a local level, with groups sharing knowledge or providing facilities. We want to encourage these initiatives and inspire more." Community, neighbourhood or voluntary groups, registered charities, schools, colleges and universities, not-for-profit organisations, businesses with fewer than 250 employees, faith groups delivering community work and parish councils are all invited to apply. The total grant fund available for the year is £65,000. Interested groups are encouraged to discuss potential projects with the County Council's team prior to applying and email waste.prevention@hants.gov.uk to arrange an informal discussion. That is waste.prevention@hants.gov.uk.
Charity names chairman. And there's a smiling man wearing glasses and one of those classic blue and white striped shirts that all city gentlemen wear. St John's Winchester has announced the appointment of Roger Bright as the new chairman of the Board of Trustees. Mr Bright succeeds retiring acting chairman Martin Lowry, who's filled the role since Richard Steele's retirement in 2017. Mr Bright worked for the Crown Estate from 1999 to 2011, firstly as Director of Finance and Administration, and from 2001 as Chief Executive and a member of the Board. Prior to these responsibilities, he's worked for the FSA, the Personal Investment Authority, the Housing Corporation, and as a senior civil servant in the Department of the Environment. Since retiring in 2011, Mr Bright has been in much demand and has served on the boards of the Council of the City University, the Royal Parks, the London First, and as a member of the London Finance Commission. He's currently chairman of the West and North West Cambridge Estates Board, chairman of Private Rented Sector Operations Limited, and a member of the Council of the Royal Veterinary College. A graduate in modern and medieval languages from Trinity Hall, Cambridge University, he lives with his family near Hook. Mr Bright said, "I am delighted to be joining the board of St John's Winchester and to being involved in this wonderful local charity. It has a long history of providing housing and care for older people in the community and has ambitious plans to extend that support in the future. It will be a privilege to support St John's with its important work, and I look forward to working with the trustees and staff."
Hospital Trust celebrates newly qualified nurses. Newly qualified nurses who have trained with Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, that's HHFT, have been celebrated at a special event. The latest cohort of Open University graduates were presented with a badge and certificate to celebrate their achievement in becoming registered nurses. Julie Dawes, chief nurse at HHFT, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, said, "It's been lovely to meet with the nurses and hear their stories. They've all come a long way and are a true inspiration. I'd like to wish our graduate nurses all the best in their careers and look forward to seeing them progress within the Trust." The Trust offers healthcare support workers an opportunity to complete nurse training degree with a 4-year course consisting of practice learning, theory hours and employment hours. Karen Russell is a recent nurse graduate who had previously worked at the Trust for 14 years as a healthcare assistant. She said, "I'm honoured to have completed my degree and very thankful to everyone who has supported me. It's been a fantastic opportunity to obtain my qualification while working part-time and looking after my family. I'm very thankful to Hampshire Hospitals for allowing me to come this far and delighted to be continuing my journey within the Trust as a staff nurse in the emergency department." And this is accompanied by a lovely picture of 11 smiling women holding up their graduation certificate.
And here we have reprieve for military bases. A military base near Winchester that was threatened with closure will remain open for 3 more years following a review by the Ministry of Defence. The news comes after Defence Minister Tobias Elwood declared in Parliament that plans to close a number of bases, including the Sir John Moore Barracks in Littleton, have been delayed. Plans to close the bases had been announced in the MOD's 2016 A Better Defence Estate, which planned on disposing of 91 military sites across the UK. Now, the Ministry of Defence has confirmed plans to close the base will be delayed until 2024, after originally being told it would be 2021. Winchester City Councillor Patrick Cunningham, who lives near the barracks, has previously questioned whether the disposal would go ahead, saying, "My thoughts are perhaps the new minister is calling all these things in and looking at them again." The future use of St John Moore Barracks, which opened in 1986 to replace Peninsula Barracks in the city centre, is currently up in the air. Last summer, Winchester Lib Dems called for the site to be used for a hospital to replace the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, currently on Romsey Road. Responding to the news, Winchester MP Steve Brine said, "My strong preference remains an employment-led development providing high-quality new jobs for local people. We should use this extra time to get that in place." Councillor Cunningham added, "This gives welcome clarity and reassurance to the many local people employed at the barracks. It also gives us a workable 5-year time frame in which to work together to achieve a preferred, high-end, employment-led mixed development for this crucial and high-profile site on the outskirts of the city." The delays were announced in an update to the Defence Estate Optimisation Programme last week, setting out new information for 33 military sites across the UK. And this is accompanied by a rather terrifying line of soldiers with their guns marching somewhere, presumably outside the city.
MP threatens to quit over no-deal Brexit. This is a little bit out of date, this item. Winchester's MP has warned he would quit his government post if he and fellow Tory politicians were not given a free vote on whether Britain should leave the EU without a deal. Steve Brine said it would be impossible for him to support a no-deal Brexit. The Minister for Public Health warned he would resign if a free vote wasn't given to MPs during the votes that have been taking place this week. Speaking to BBC's Radio 4, the Westminster Hour, Mr. Brine said, "I think a free vote would be very smart. I would find it very difficult, actually impossible, to be part of a policy that was pursuing actively no-deal." It came as Theresa May battled to save her Brexit strategy, although it ended with the withdrawal agreement being rejected again in the Commons vote on Tuesday. Tory Brexiteers had said rejection of the withdrawal agreement was inevitable unless the Prime Minister was able to secure significant changes to the Northern Ireland backstop. That came ahead of the government securing legally binding changes to the Brexit deal after Theresa May made a last-minute dash to Strasbourg for talks on Monday night. However, her Brexit strategy was dealt a devastating blow after the House of Commons rejected her EU withdrawal agreement by an overwhelming majority for the second time, voting by 391 to 242 against the deal, despite the Prime Minister's assurance that new agreements reached with Jean-Claude Juncker in Strasbourg would ensure the United Kingdom cannot be trapped in the controversial backstop arrangement indefinitely. Although the 149 margin was reduced from the record 230 vote defeat of the first meaningful vote in January, Mrs. May was left far adrift from a majority, with just 17 days to go to the scheduled date of Brexit on March the 28th. European Commission President Mr. Juncker had already warned that if MPs turned down the package agreed in Strasbourg on Monday, there would be no third chance to renegotiate. In line with the promise set out by Mrs. May last month, MPs were due to vote on Wednesday. That's after the Chronicle went to press, OK, on whether they were willing for the UK to leave the EU without a deal on March the 29th. They did in fact reject no deal, as most Westminster observers were expecting. A third vote was set to take place on the Thursday that this paper was published, requesting an extension.
I'm a little confused about this one. It's headlined Rock Challenge 2019, and the headline is Young Students Wow the Crowd. And there are four very dramatic pictures of young people in action, obviously taken the pictures taken during performance, but there's not a guitar or a drum in sight. So it's obviously some other kind of performance. The story goes, dozens of Winchester students took part in Rock Challenge 2019. The event held last week took place at Southampton Guildhall for six nights of music and drama. The venue hosted three evenings of secondary school battles, followed by another three for the junior school competition. Winchester College Peter Simmons came second on the opening night, beaten only by Redbridge Community School's It's Just One Straw performance. Peter Simmons' students impressed judges with One Hit Is All It Takes, which looked at the controversial topic of recreational drug use and highlighted that no one truly knows the damage it may cause to them. In third place was the Henry Beaufort School, Winchester, with Words Will Not Define Me, which followed themes of society's effect on young people. Barton Peveril College, Eastleigh, came fourth, and the pictures all show young people in action during performance, and it all looks much more like contemporary dance routines rather than actual bands, so I suppose that's the drama event.
Now, bar plan for old registry office site. A leading city councillor has said a new bar is planned for a disused building under major city centre regeneration plans. Station approach plans are currently being progressed by Winchester City Council with a view to revamping the area around Winchester's railway station. Councillor Steve Miller, portfolio holder for estates, said it is planned that the former registry office will be extended to form a bar or restaurant. However, Councillor Miller said it would not be possible to bring the building, which was vacated by Hampshire County Council around 4 years ago, back into use in the short term. He said, "We have been able to encourage uses in the buildings in central Winchester, but Station Approach is on a much shorter development time frame, with an outline planning application hopefully submitted by the end of March this year. It is not viable to let the building for a short-term use, and in any case, substantial adaptations and refurbishment work would be required."
Grant helps towards goal. A Hampshire junior school has been able to refurbish its football fields by using a grant from the Premier League and FA Facilities Fund. Coldon Common Primary School received £331, which was used to replace the old goalposts on the school field. Frances Hardy, the head teacher at Coldon Common Primary School, said, new goalposts will allow our pupils and other young people in the local community who are in their formative years to enjoy playing football with safe equipment that's been purchased with assistance from the Premier League and the FA Facilities Fund. We hope that this introduction to sport at grassroots level will lead to a lifelong participation in and enjoyment of sport that will help them to pursue a healthy, active lifestyle. The posts will be used by around 70 children during after-school clubs and the village youth football club's under-12s team. Paul Thorogood, chief executive of the Football Foundation, said, "The Premier League and the FA's Facilities Fund is dedicated to improving grassroots sport across the country, and I am pleased to hear that their investment is going to support Coldon Common Primary School in their purchase of new goalposts. This will be of real benefit to its players in developing their game."
That concludes the extract for the week ending the 15th of March 2019. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Jean Gardner. Jean has been involved in editing Winchester Talking Newspaper for 25 years, and sadly this was her last edition for the foreseeable future. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and of course thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.